Hello everybody, welcome back to the Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast. I'm Mark Goldbridge and what a weekend it's been. Newcastle have finally won a trophy. Tottenham have lost 15 games. Arsenal and Chelsea was a damp squib. Liverpool in crisis potentially. The relegation battle is an absolute joke, as is Thomas Tuchel's England squad to some. Lots for us to get into this morning. Will, how are you?
Bring back Gareth Southgate. After a squad like that, you can only look back at what you've had before and say the man knew what he was doing. A disgrace from Thomas Tuchel, a disgrace from Liverpool. Let's get into it.
Well, talking about England squad, which we will do in a little bit, it feels like we have got Gareth Southgate because some of those selections are prime Southgate. I mean, the only question is, where's Harry Maguire? But I think he's actually injured as a United fan. Let's start off where we need to start off with history in the making for Newcastle. There are probably not many Newcastle fans listening this morning. They're probably still drinking or asleep after a very good night of celebration. Deservedly so. This is the magic of football. They haven't won a trophy in many, many years. They tried against United 2 years ago and lost, but they tried again yesterday. And if you don't succeed, try again. And they did. And I thought they were absolutely worthy winners. And so much so that I think we should shine a light on Newcastle, Will, because so many people are talking about what went wrong with Liverpool, which we will do. But what went right with Newcastle?
Just everything, wasn't it? I think, you know, even down to the little intricate details of everything. I think they stayed at a different hotel beforehand to not get wrapped up in the emotion. Everything sort of pre-match, it seemed that they were like really up for it, but sort of maintaining those levels. And then again, like you go down to the details, the set plays. I mean, one, how Alexis McAllister is allowed to be anywhere near the vicinity of Dan Burn is absolutely remarkable. But just to keep highlighting, pinpointing on those weaknesses, really capitalising on them, I just thought it showed the real best version of Eddie Howe and everything he's doing at Newcastle United.
I also think as well, I definitely think that Newcastle from minute one, the intensity of their game plan was there to see, and they clearly didn't want to let this opportunity slip. Trophies. I always said this under Ten Hag with United. He's gone, but winning trophies is not actually straightforward in the Premier League. There's a lot of clubs that want to win trophies, and that's evidenced by how long it's been for Newcastle. They have been in finals. I remember them getting to a couple of FA Cup finals as well years ago with Shearer, and that's there in history now for them. And I just think Eddie Howe probably, yeah, lots of tactical work as you'd expect, but also I think a lot of mental work around this is 90 minutes. It's 11 against 11. And if we put in the effort and everybody plays their game, we will get the result. And football's quite simple at times. And I think the surprising thing for me, but also the credit to Newcastle, is that watching the game, there was never a period where I thought, oh, Liverpool are in control here, which you would expect in any game. Like any game, you would expect that one team's going to have a period of domination. And they never did. Even after the goal, I was like, oh, this last 5 minutes now. But then they just took the ball up the other end and kept it in the corner and killed the game. So game management and also management, but also the players, I thought were just absolutely incredible from minute one to minute 90. And it was a total and utter dominant performance.
Yeah. And then again, like you look at the weaknesses that they could have had, you know, no Anthony Gordon and no Lewis Hall. But like, I thought Kieran Trippier would probably come in obviously, the way that's been adjusted, Kieran Trippier is excellent. Just even down from like the more like shithousery details and just, you know, getting sort of a leader perspective as well. Liveramento is absolutely unbelievable down that left-hand side. Yeah. Mo Salah didn't even get a sniff. And then that midfield three, when it's absolutely at its best from like all the interceptions that Joe Linton did, Gomez as a leader, and the run that Tonali did at the end, it was just the everything that Newcastle fans probably wanted 2 years ago out of a performance, even, you know, barring the result that they got today and yesterday, and they got the result as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm happy to start off there with Newcastle, but let's talk about Liverpool. Obviously, Mo Salah's going to come under the radar a little bit. Probably favourite for Ballon d'Or a couple of weeks ago. He ain't going to get anything at all now, apart from a Premier League title and probably Player of the Year here. But I think that one thing I would say about Liverpool, and I suppose it's a bigger picture, I was trying to think, if I was a Liverpool fan, what would have annoyed me about that result? And I think that one thing that's probably not been discussed, and I do like Kelleher, is that this whole, well, he's our Carabao Cup goalkeeper, so we're going to pick him. I get that. I've seen Man City do it with Ortega in the past. But Alisson saves that header from Dan Byrne. Like he does. Like that's what a top goalkeeper does. It's a really good header, but you can see from Kelleher, he's just gone a little bit late. And it's those fine margins. Like, you're not playing Stoke, you're playing Newcastle. They're a good team and they haven't got Anthony Gordon and they played really, really well. It is those fine margins. And I just think at the end of the day, the reason I use Kelleher as an example is a lot of people are going to talk about Salah and we'll talk about that. But, you know, Liverpool weakened themselves in a key position, understandably so, because that's their Carabao Cup keeper. And Newcastle didn't weaken themselves. They absolutely went for it. And after the loss in midweek as well, I think this is what happens. You know, it's high-end football and slight drops of percentages here and there can lead to results like that. But also, I suppose Mo Salah has to be a topic of discussion as well, Will.
But I think with Kelleher, you're spot on, because I think that ties back into exactly what you're speaking about with trophies, you know, aren't given. And sometimes when you are in this dominant period, you know, maybe not so much of a dominant period, but Liverpool are in a period where they're winning trophies. And, you know, Kelleher has won trophies with Liverpool and been a catalyst for that in some of the games. But I do think that's maybe some of the arrogance where those top teams think that they can, you know, have a cup goalkeeper where... Liverpool went for years without winning a trophy. So I just think play your best team that you can and try and win that, because sitting here as a Birmingham City fan with only a League Cup to my name over the last 20 years, like those days are finite. So just, yeah, I agree. And even from a leadership perspective as well, wasn't it? Just I know you've got Van Dijk in front of him, but there are certain instances where just there's a more unity, and with Trent out as well, I just think anything you can do to add more experience to that back line, it just really serves you well, doesn't it?
Well, it definitely handicaps the team. You know, obviously if Liverpool win it, it's all fine. But, you have weakened your team. That's no disrespect to Kelleher, but that defence won't feel as confident without Alisson in goal, and you have weakened your team. And then when you get at the other end, Mo Salah having another quiet game for Liverpool, then suddenly your drop-off is quite, well, we've changed our goalkeeper and our best player's not in the game. And I think a lot of people talk about Salah, and we talk about Salah a lot on here, and I find it, you know, quite a repetitive conversation, because we don't live in a world where players are brilliant every single game. But I think Salah was, I'm glad you shouted out Liveramento, because I don't think he got shouted out enough, and you've still got to keep Salah quiet, who's one of the best players in the world, and he did do that. And I think he's another one in the England squad that deserves it, with Dan Byrne, actually, even though it's a weird squad. I thought that was a good selection. But in the case of Mo Salah, look, everyone knows he's the best player in the league, but also the best player at Liverpool. If I was a coach, I'd be shutting him down as well. So it's Liverpool's job to, you know, if you want to get Mo Salah in a game like that, other players need to be a threat so that Newcastle have got to deal with them, and then it creates space for Salah. But if those other players don't turn up and you're focused on keeping Salah quiet, that's exactly what we saw. Newcastle, very, very comfortable. So yeah, I think Salah was quiet, but it's a cup final against a good team. They're going to know to keep Salah quiet. And all right, it's his job not to be quiet, but where are the other players turning up? Where was Jota? Where was Luis Diaz? Where was Nunez when he came on? Where was Szoboszlai? These players didn't turn up. And therefore, it puts more pressure on Salah, who's having a quiet game as well.
Yeah, I was sat like halfway. Well, I think it was around the 60th, 70th minute, obviously thinking about doing the podcast today. And then just, you know, obviously Mo Salah is normally a big topic of discussion. And I was just like, it felt, even when he's had bad games this season, he turns up with those moments, even if it's a penalty or a goal or a strike out of nowhere. But you just felt he was nowhere near that today. And you go back to that Newcastle side, in every aspect, they've absolutely battered him, like from the midfield three, from the fullbacks, Isak on Van Dijk, you know, Murphy winning that header at the back post against Robertson to get the assist. Like that doesn't happen unless you're absolutely at it firing. And that's where they've done them, really. And that's the worrying thing, isn't it, from a Liverpool perspective? Because the PSG game going into this, I think a lot of people can say it's tiredness as well, but you do worry, a bare minimum, the effort has got to be that, like, at the top of its game, and it wasn't yesterday.
I think it's also what people don't realise about Liverpool is that it's been an amazing season. Arne Slot coming in and winning the Premier League, which he will do in his first season, is incredible. But they won't be the first team in history to run out of steam towards the end of the season. I remember Napoli doing it a couple of years ago when they won the league over there. Everyone thought they were going to win the Champions League and they didn't. And is it not the first time that Liverpool and Slot have been questioned as well? So maybe the players and the manager are having a bit of an issue in responding to that because it's the first time, which is why I've said I think next season for Liverpool is going to be really key because it's his first proper summer transfer window. Winning it, having won it, is very difficult. The questions will be asked, and that's something we've not seen of Slot and this Liverpool team. They've not really been asked any questions yet, and they are being asked questions at the moment. And what the answers we're getting is we're human, you know, we're not a robot. So, but Liverpool are going to win. Liverpool will be fine. You know, they're going to be. If you're a Liverpool fan, you've had a tough week, but when you've got that Premier League title in a few weeks' time, losing this game to Newcastle is really not going to be at the forefront of your mind, or PSG, if we're being honest.
Well, it'll be experience for Slot as well, isn't it? Because the English calendar is unique in terms of, you know, how it builds in momentum around like that Christmas period when it's so intense. And then it always seems when we get to this business end in March that there is this week for a team, isn't there? Like Arsenal last season, teams before, where everything just seems to fall away from all those cup competitions. And even down to how he's probably dealt with it. You know, we speak about the Kelleher situation. I don't get the Kelleher situation. Well, I do and I don't, because in terms of like resting players, obviously goalies are the, you know, least physical output there. And I know you put in Kelleher in there for the cup experience and everything around that. But, you know, even Quanta at right back with the Trent injury, I just think he'll look at how he's building that squad maybe for next season and identify those key areas for just building out the squad maybe with a bit more experience.
Yeah, and I think that I was doing the watch along yesterday on That's Football, and there was a few people saying that, is this Liverpool team that good? You know, are they one of the worst title winners since Leicester? And I was like, hold on a minute.
No.
Up until Christmas, they dominated the Champions League. They won that, and they were dominating the Premier League. I mean, Liverpool are winning the Premier League because of what they did at the first half of the season. Yeah, they've had a few wobbles, but they're still 12 points clear as well in a very competitive league. So, yeah, I think Liverpool are sort of doing what I've seen United do this years ago when we used to win titles. You get knocked out of the Champions League, you know you're going to win your domestic league, and the mentality can drop because you're just a little bit down, you know. But they won't be in a few weeks when they win that Premier League.
But we speak about next season and what Slot's going to do in the transfer window, but then there's still the three big question marks going over it. So you know, if you're going into next season into a March, and we're talking about adding more experience, but then you've lost Virgil van Dijk, Mo Salah and Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think it's, if you're in exactly the same boat in March next season going into those games, I find it hard with how Liverpool do their transfer policy that they are going to replace that amount of experience in that window if they lose all three.
And also, I don't know what that does for the Salah. I mean, Trent's going to go, I think, in my opinion, but I don't know what that does for Mo Salah and Van Dijk. Do they sort of go, if I'm going to go, now's the time to go, and this is why I need to go, because we've won the Premier League, but look what happened in the Champions League and the Carabao Cup. I mean, there's still a couple of players away from that, and maybe a change is a good thing. So I don't actually know what that happens, but I think that's why Liverpool's season next season is going to be really interesting. But yeah, fair play to Newcastle. Let's move towards the Premier League. And just very quickly on the Carabao Cup, the handball, do you think it was a handball?
No, I didn't.
Trippier.
Yeah, no, I thought just sort of about in the realms of getting away with it. What about you?
I think I don't understand the handball rule. So the way I described it is if that was at the other end and it was Newcastle, I'd be like, oh my God, that's a penalty. But then when it was Liverpool and Trippier, because I don't want Liverpool to win, I was like, nah, that's not a penalty. So it's one of those where I've definitely seen him give him. And I think definitely in Europe, that's a penalty. But the handball rule is nobody can actually honestly sit here this morning and say, that's definitely a penalty or it's definitely not. I didn't feel, it's almost the mood of the game, it didn't feel like it should be a penalty. But I will admit, actually, technically, well, why wouldn't it? You know, he does hit the very bit of his hand on it, but didn't feel like it should be. And I think even many Liverpool fans would agree with that. But then when you actually analyse it, you go, well, why not? You know, so.
Just before we leave that as well, what did you make to the pre-match comments from Carragher saying that the Carabao Cup was better than the FA Cup?
Yeah, I sort of struggled to go and find that clip. I'd seen it around. I'm sure Carragher said that the treble that Liverpool did when he played, when they won the UEFA Cup, FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, was harder than the proper one. So I don't know. I mean, is he winding people up or does he just get a bit deluded? But there's no, I mean, the FA Cup's bigger than the Carabao Cup. There's no doubt about that. What I would say is that I do agree that the Carabao Cup can be a little bit more appealing as a player, maybe, because you play it earlier in the season when there's, you know, you can probably take a little bit more focus on it, especially the FA Cup, as we've discussed many times, can be a bit of a hindrance when you've got the return of the Champions League and, you know, Premier League, etc. And we see teams putting their reserves out. But you know, technically, he's wrong. The FA Cup is far bigger than the,
I think the reason,
than the Carabao Cup.
I think that the FA Cup 100% is bigger and definitely got more prestige. And from a worldwide basis, you know, even the, you see fans get on board of it from like in, trying to get involved with the English sort of heritage stuff around football. But in terms of the way the Carabao, you know, the Carabao Cup was really struggling, wasn't it? Like we've had chats on air about it going, but I think the way it sort of changed itself, getting all those early rounds in up in August and September, and then, you know, everything's midweek, like he was saying, everything's under the light. So it just feels a little, especially when you get to those bigger games, like the semi-finals this year were absolutely brilliant, weren't they? Like of Spurs going for a trophy against a Liverpool side, and obviously the wait for Newcastle, which they finally delivered on. So I do think it, any questions around it not having its place in the calendar, especially with almost having a new winner on the trophy this season, I think have really sort of put it back firmly as a really important competition for fans and players.
It's funny because I think teams like Man City not winning it helps. I think, like you say, Newcastle winning it, Man United won it, Liverpool won it last year. But obviously, I think Man City had quite a bit of dominance of it, and it was like, oh God, you know. So I think those things help as well. To the Premier League, no dominance there from Manchester City either. But I wanted to start off with the relegation battle actually, because Man United beat Leicester last night, Forest beat Ipswich, Wolves beat Southampton, and that's 9 points from safety now for Leicester and Ipswich. So yeah, they're all going down, but the worrying theme is that it's three up, three down guaranteed, and it was three up, three down last year. I think already I'd relegate two that come up. Maybe Leeds might do a job, but Premier League's got a real issue here, Will. I know longer term you'd love to see Birmingham City moving up, but it's the gap's just getting bigger, and Spurs have lost 15 games and they're nowhere near relegation. That's Wolves bad, have been it? Terrible. They're 9 points clear. Man United have been terrible. I was looking at it, I was thinking, you know what? Part of the problem with the Super League was that they didn't want relegation in it. And the Premier League, inadvertently or by design, is effectively creating a no relegation system. You can have an absolutely abysmal season and know that you're not going to get relegated if you're one of the established teams, because you almost look at it and go, well, we play the newly promoted teams twice. There's 18 points there. If we can get 14 of those, we actually only need about another four wins and we'll stay up. By design, it's flawed. The gap between the Premier League and the Championship is just getting bigger and bigger.
I think the parachute payments were probably bought in for a reason at the time that were, you know, obviously for the right reason, because teams were coming down, having spent a load of money in gambling. But now it just feels from an outside perspective, and there's more articulate people that will go into it and break down the finances. But from my perspective, it just feels like it's a safety net in terms of, oh, right, we'll come up. And then when we go back down to the Championship, we'll be in a much stronger position. And then that's when we'll really look to build. And then that's when we'll try and come up. But that doesn't happen, because thankfully football doesn't work like that. And when you do come back down into the Championship, look, this is Leeds' second season. They're on their second year of the parachute payments, which do decrease each time. So if they don't go up, you know, they're on their third year, and then it becomes a real gamble. So then it's like, well, how much are you going to spend and what are you going to do? I think that the parachute payments have been bought in and have been used and abused slightly, because I mean, like, teams like Ipswich didn't plan to be here, especially the season that they came up. So when they come back down now, they'll be in a much stronger position. But I just think you are there in the Premier League to try and, ironically, they've probably given it the best go out of everyone, haven't they? I mean, Leicester City under Ruud van Nistelrooy have absolutely honked out the joint, and Southampton are currently joined to be the worst team in the Premier League. And those were the two established sides. That's what I don't get this year, especially with Southampton and Leicester. Like, they are in a position to be stronger than they are. And, you know, getting rid of Steve Cooper so early on for Ruud van Nistelrooy, like, that's got to be one of the worst decisions of the season. Russell Martin trying to play the way he did with the squad that he had. Did you see him on Monday Night Football trying to talk about what he'd do differently? And it'd just be like, I think he said everything else apart from the tactic. So it's like, yeah. I could have told you that. And but then, you know, Ipswich go down. What is the best asset that Ipswich Town have? Kieran McKenna, I'd say. And if he goes down and a Premier League job comes up at a Crystal Palace or with that low to mid-table side, he's going to go. And then that's probably your plans all messed up really there. So, and as well, sorry, just to continue, but like, there are so many good examples of getting it right with not having to have the billions to spend. You know, Brighton, Bournemouth, Brentford have all come up and, you know, have done it a different way. So, I worry with the parachute payments that people just sort of go, down and then back up again.
It's like the establishment, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, the established society and the Championship are almost like these people, we just want to get an invite, and then they get invited and it's like, you're never going to last. You know, I look at the Championship table, like Leeds top, Sheffield United, Burnley, all separated by 2 points, and then 9 points behind them, Sunderland. And I think, right, Burnley, Sheffield United, going to go straight back down, 100%. Sunderland, Coventry, West Brom, straight back down. Leeds, maybe, but to be honest, I'll predict they'll go straight back down. And you go, well, ultimately, all those teams are doing is they're looking at the Premier League as the promised land where they're going to make a load of money. And if we get relegated, so what? And I'm like, there's nobody looking at it as a, we want to get to the Premier League and stay in the Premier League. And as you say, if you want to do that, you've got to look at the Brentfords, the Brightons, you know, the teams that have a strategy that's more longer term than let's get in the Premier League, because we saw it with Solihull Moors, didn't it? It's like, let's get out of the National League and get into the normal league. But, you know, you've also got to have a strategy when you get there to stay in there. And I just think, and you're up against teams like Wolves, et cetera, who've got international players. That's another thing, but I don't see this changing. And I think it will become, it's certainly something we've been talking about for the last 18 months. And I think it will, you know, what the mainstream are like, they'll start figuring this one out soon at some point and it'll become a big debate point. But for me, it already is shocking. And Leicester against United yesterday was a United Thursday night, season defining game, lots of energy, lots of, you know, effort. You're playing Sunday against Leicester away. If Leicester win that, they're 6 points off Wolves. They've got a chance. It's their season in a game and they could be playing now and still not score. And Man United could be taking a player off every 10 minutes. They were absolutely terrible. But when I looked at their lineup, I was like, they're technically not a team that you would definitely relegate. You know, they have got players like Connor Cody, FaZe, the goalkeeper's good, and Ndidi, Samari. It's not great, but it's not. In years gone by, you'd look at it and go, that could stay up, but no, not a chance.
And also, I think, you know, You mentioned like a Sheffield United. These are teams are coming up with like big fan bases and big, you know, been in the Premier League and big established clubs. But then, you know, we go back to Bournemouth, who are, you know, it's everything around it, isn't it? I don't know the finer details of the Brighton strategy and how they, you know, keep replicating those players and bringing everything around by that. But it's getting everything like that right, isn't it? And Southampton's recruitment wasn't right because that wasn't in place. Leicester's recruitment's definitely not been right. I felt Ipswich gave it the best go and they had to have the biggest overhaul just because of bouncing from two leagues, but ultimately that's not been right as well. So
I was just going to say, just to add to your point there and you can come back, is that, you know with relegation as well as I do, that normally relegation teams start getting the worldy results now. Like this is the time where they suddenly start playing like prime Barcelona and they're actually just losing every week.
Yeah, and with Blues it'll be good because I feel like we're building a team that can grow in terms of like we'll come into the Championship. You know, everything gets highlighted around Jay Stansfield, but there's some good players between the ages of like 20 to 25 that are going to grow and get better. We're in a very privileged position because of the money that we'll be able to spend and the ownership that we've got, but I think it's just been a lot smarter. And the thing is, people get so desperate where say Leeds don't go up this year and they're in the third year of the parachute payments. And then it becomes like real, like bust or go home because that you've got to gamble with the money you've got left. So do you keep your stars, and that, and that's why we love football, to be fair, though, isn't it? Because of the gamble that you have to take sometimes to get across there. But something needs to change in terms of how sides are coming to the Premier League, like you said, and just going, oh well, yeah, that we'll have the money and then we'll give it a go next year, because that's not right.
Well, I mean, Burnley have only lost two games in the Championship this season. They'll probably come back up with Scott Parker. But I'm looking at their lineup there and I'm like, that's going straight back down. There's just nothing in that team that's like progressively going to come in and start picking up points at Brentford and stuff like that. And I had a mate, Dave, shout out Dave, who used to work with West Brom fan. I remember him saying to me when they were doing the whole, you know, up, down, and he was like, I prefer it in the Championship. You know, he goes to a lot of away games and he's like, I prefer it in the Championship because you actually have a chance of winning an away game. Whereas in the Premier League, once you've been to Goodison Park and Emirates once, you've seen it. And it's like, you just go there and you get beat every week. And there's just, yeah. And I think it's the fans that suffer, because I think they're starting to see through it. You know, we're in the Premier League. It's amazing. And I think a lot of fans are looking at it now and going, yeah, for the last 2 years, to be fair, I think it's really becoming to a stark reminder that when you're getting promoted, you're getting relegated. You're also celebrating relegation. You're going straight back down. There's not a chance.
But and also on the flip side of that, like, I think Luton Town were very much in the Ipswich Town boat of, you know, they didn't expect to be in the Premier League when they were, and they've come back down to the Championship with those parachute payments and, you know, with money in the bank. They're currently lying 23rd in the Championship and in danger of going a double drop. So, like, that's how cruel football can be. We've seen Sunderland Till I Die when they came back down. Like, that documentary was supposed to be all around the promotion season and how they were going to recover and go back to the Premier League. Well, from a viewing point of view, it turned out to be a really good watch, but for all the wrong reasons. So, yeah, like you said, just I think if you're there, just everything you can do to stay up. And that doesn't mean throwing money at it. I think it just means being a lot smarter when you get there.
Yeah, even look, we'll move on, but I just think the first season is survival. We've seen it with Forest and Fulham and Brentford and everyone. Like, you just got to stay up. The biggest prats are the ones who come up, like old Pratt face from bloody Southampton and company from Burnley, and starts going, oh, I'm a hipster and I'm going to pass my way through this. No, you've just got to bloody survive. And being clever enough to do that in the Premier League is, you know, you've got to look at the games and go, look, we've just got to get 3 points here or a point here. And you've got to get, look, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you've got to get 30 points. And that, it's really got to get 35, but they can't even get 30 points. It's a joke. I wanted to talk about Spurs though, because 15 losses and it's not even April is incredible for that. I mean, one, they should be in a relegation battle, but we know why they're not. But two, I love Ange. And I bloody do. Bloody love Ange. But he's got it. I don't think they're going to win the Europa League, and therefore he's surely, we're big fans of Ange and Spurs mentality and ownership and players. Definitely, yes, criticism. But that's a lot of games to lose. And I expected them to lose at Fulham as well.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors. Also, I think, you know, in terms of cracks appearing, every defeat now, he seems to be having some sort of confrontation when he's coming down the tunnel or reacting to something. And I think everything
bloody mate, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think everything in a modern manager just needs to, like, if you're physically showing those cracks are appearing, that's where the media latch onto them. If you're in a dressing room, I think you'd latch onto them a lot more, you know, and he shouldn't have to take all the abuse he gets. But I just, you know, and then you got Matthias Tell jumping in the away end as a lone player, trying to be the diffuser for a Spurs side that are like absolutely lacking in all sorts of quality. So again, it's Europa League or bust for them, and he might deliver on his promise of winning in the second season. And they get in the Champions League, and you know, it might be sort of one of those seasons like West Ham had a couple of years ago, where it didn't really matter where you finished in the league, and all you remember is the trophy and the future promise of what everything's delivered. So it's a lot of pressure, isn't it? But maybe the sort of being in Europe and that style of football I feel people have obviously worked it out now, haven't they, so, over here. But obviously from a European perspective, maybe it ties in a little bit better, so he will be a bit more fruitful.
Look, the amazing thing is, we were talking about it yesterday on the United Stand, is that you can have this horrific season and then technically have a better season than Newcastle. Because if Newcastle don't get top five, they'll be in the Europa League with a Carabao Cup. But Man United or Spurs can be right down in the bottom of the Premier League and in the Champions League, which is going to be fun. You know, we're going to be in a financial better situation than Newcastle. Newcastle fans want that trophy, fair play. But I look at Spurs yesterday, it was quite an equal game. Yeah, they played Thursday night football, but Vicario, Adogi, Davies, Romero, Spence, Bissouma, Gray, Bentancur, Tell, Solanke, Johnson, Son was brought on, Maddison was brought on, Porro was on the bench. Like the injuries excuse isn't an excuse. Everyone's got those. They're just not good. They're like Man United, although Man United have turned the corner and we've got a new manager. So it's not like Man United, but Ange is in season two. 15 losses is, you know, you're not, as a fan, you've got every right to moan about that. And look, can they win the Europa League? I don't know. But that's what they've got to do. And if he did, it would be a big up yours from Ange, who says he wins a trophy in his second season. So we're here to see it.
Well, even when we were speaking about Amorim last week, weren't we? And you corrected me rightly about, you know, him sort of adjust, you know, the systems there as it is and gets highlighted. But there are adjustments in that. And it just feels with the big Ange ones that there are ones there, but they're not working. And something has got to change from a Premier League perspective going forward. Because what if the same set of circumstances apply next season? In terms of like they get the same injuries, the crucial players, like that has got to be a thought going into the new season, because they've got to be a top six side going forward. No excuses. And if they win the Europa League and get Champions League football, maybe add a couple of players in, because you know it's never going to be an absolute war chest that Daniel Levy delivers, even if the money's there from Champions League football. Like, so you're telling me that they're going into a Champions League campaign off the back of this season? That would worry me even more. Like, something's not right at Spurs, and everything gets obviously pointed at Levy, and then it gets pointed at Ange. But yeah, I haven't got the answers for that question. It just feels a bit too big for my small head.
I think you're right. I think if Spurs did win the Europa League, obviously you'd keep Ange, but I think a lot of these problems would rear their head again next year. It's an incredible amount of games to lose. And, you know, there's clearly some sort of issue between players and manager when they're losing that many games. I mean, they've lost more games than West Ham. And they've only lost three games less than Ipswich. So it's bad. We've spoke about relegation, though. We spoke about the title. Before we talk about this England squad, the race for top five is incredible. You've got Chelsea... Well, Forest are third now. They're 5 points clear of fourth, which is, we'll talk about Forest in a moment, because I think they're almost there for basically being tough to catch. I mean, they are, what? Well, Newcastle got a game in hand, so they're 5 points clear from fourth. Chelsea in fourth with 49, Man City in fifth with 48, Newcastle in sixth with 47, but a game in hand. Brighton got 47, Fulham and Villa 45. Bournemouth have had a bad couple of results there in 44. In fact, Bournemouth have really choked. They've lost three of their last four and drawn one of those. So Bournemouth, just a couple of wins that have put them up. They must be gutted. Brentford beating them, of course. Chelsea, I watched, Will. I thought they were absolutely shocking against Arsenal, considering that meant they're not on the beach. They played like they were on the beach, but they actually have got a chance to top five. Man City, I think he'll still do it, but I mean, another disappointing result from them. Newcastle, I think it depends on what the cup does for them. Does it inspire them, or do they go, oh, we've won a cup? Brighton, is it sustainable? Four wins and a draw in their last five. Fulham would be miraculous. Villa got a lot on their plate. Who you got in this top five now? Because it looks like fifth place will get Champions League football because of how well the English clubs have done in Europe.
I think one of the big questions coming out of Newcastle's win yesterday is sort of, is this the start of the new era? Is this the dawning of a new tide for them? Because that, you know, they've got the trophy that they've been yearning for so many years, and they've done it, and that pressure's off. Like, but does that mean the pressure's off, right, relax for the rest of the season, or will it be this new era? And I feel with Eddie Howe, with the setup, with the players that they do have and the mentality, I think it will be a kickstarter in terms of getting back in the Champions League, trophy in the bag, and a real focus on that. So I think Newcastle will be in there. Chelsea have just, I just don't feel convinced when I see them. Obviously, not coming off the back of yesterday's one, because that's an obvious thing to say. But even in those sort of Leicester and Southampton games, there was just nothing that was really sort of where you'd get your teeth into. Brighton getting a draw against Manchester City just sort of give me hope that their run can continue, and that's their primary focus, isn't it? Whereas with an Aston Villa going into a Champions League...
Well, their next game's Villa. Brighton Villa is the next game.
Yeah, and that'll be quite, yeah, quite telling. I just think with Villa's two quarterfinals coming against PSG, and then say they were to be knocked out at the end of that, and then would it be too much to do if they've had a bit of form drop off? So I think Manchester City will go into fourth, and then I think Newcastle will go into fifth, and then I think Chelsea will drop out. But I think it will go down to the last day. And also, people are already talking about the Premier League being over. And yeah, in terms of a title race, it is. And in terms of a relegation battle, it is. So I suppose it is. But no, what I was going to say is the Champions League is absolutely like career defining for some teams. Like for Nottingham Forest to do it, I really don't think we should play it down in terms of what it would mean for that club. And, you know, if a Brighton can sneak into Champions League as well, it totally revolutionises the football club going forward. So there is a lot of jeopardy to play for, so get excited.
Do you think Forest will do it now?
I think they just seem very like... not robotic, but they, you know, the performance against that they were so, the three goals they scored against Ipswich in the space of about 5 minutes were just absolutely clinical of a side that you see Manchester City do that and you shrug your shoulders and go, oh, you know, classic Man City, capitalise on the mistakes. But this is Nottingham Forest with like Alanga bombing on, Hudson-Odoi doing his thing. Chris Wood didn't score, but obviously he's such a danger. Morgan Gibbs-White, who thankfully has been called up to the England squad, just, they just look so...
I thought he hadn't been.
No, but he got called up last night.
Oh, did he?
I think
so. Why, because of an injury?
Well, he just said squad update and he'd been updated. But anyway, yeah, I think they're absolutely ruthless, and I think that's why they'll get there. And also, it's that sort of antidote to everything that's being played. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone, yeah, like, you know, like you said, of like having this style of football, but Forest offers something different and it's working for them.
I think with where they are in the table, third place, 54 points, I think, honestly, 67 points will get top five. So they need basically four wins. Because we're in that point now, aren't we, where it's basically nine games left. They need four wins with the gap that they've got. And I was looking at their fixtures and they've got Man United at home, Everton at home, Brentford at home, Leicester at home, Chelsea at home. I think they can do it on their home form. I think they're going to do it now. I've probably just given them the kiss of death because all season I've said they won't do it. But I think they're going to do it now. And like you, I agree. I think if you get a Forest, a Bournemouth or a Fulham or a Brighton in the Champions League, it's not the same. I think it's a good sort of circle in the show. I think when you get a Luton or an Ipswich in the Premier League, it's not exciting. It used to be when you got like Barnsley and that, you go, ooh. But I think you now go, yeah, it's just a bloody holiday. You're going home in 2 weeks. Enjoy it. But I think if you got a Forest or a Bournemouth in the Champions League, I think they've got a chance of getting through to the knockout stages. I genuinely think that the Champions League, the Premier League clubs have done well this year, like Villa and everybody. So, and I think that, I mean, look, I don't know what it would do for their league form. I think that would be a wake-up call, but I mean, I wouldn't expect either of them to get top five next year, but it would be a European adventure and it would be an interesting one to see them playing the likes of Juventus and maybe a Real Madrid or something like that. So it would be, I hope that Forest or Bournemouth do get in, or Brighton, and we lose a Chelsea or a Newcastle or someone like that. But I think I agree with you. I think Man City will get it. I think Forest will probably get it now. And then I'd probably think it just depends on what Newcastle do after that final, because, you know, it can be an inspiration, and knowing Eddie Howe, it probably will be, and it should be, but it can also be, you know, we've done it. We've won a cup for the first time in decades, and they might just drop a little bit. It'd be interesting.
We won it in 2011. 4 months later, we got relegated. We've not been in the Premier League since, and we're playing Europa League football in the Championship. So I don't think that's going to happen to them. But also, just on the point of like Bournemouth and Brighton, I think that almost ties into the relegation battle, because the more and more these Championship sides aren't getting promoted, it just really strengthens the teams that are established in the Premier League. So when you're coming up, it's even harder to beat, because, you know, you even look at like a Crystal Palace first 11 to a Fulham first 11. Teams are going to have to do something different in terms of their recruitment, like a Brentford and Bournemouth and Brighton have done to make it work. So, but like you said, they could go in a Champions League, and the strength of the Premier League is that they could do a really good number.
Well, also, I mean, didn't Morgan Rodgers play for Sheffield United the season they got promoted and went to Villa? Is that right? Or was he Burnley or something like that?
Where was Morgan Rodgers before? He was at Middlesbrough, I think he was at before.
That wasn't him then. It was somebody who went from a newly promoted team in the summer to another Premier League club without playing a minute in the Prem. And I think that's the thing as well. Players, like, if you're in that Burnley team and you're a good player, and then you get promoted, and then in the summer, I don't know, Brighton ring you up and say, do you want to come? You're going to go, because you're going to go, well, I'd rather go and play for Brighton now, because I've got no chance of staying up with Burnley. So these newly promoted teams as well, they're easy to go and take their players from as well. I think it's a bad, well, look, it's a running theme. Give us your comments on that. Let's speak about England. It is the international break. England is a quiz question. Will England are playing Latvia and two? Is it?
Oh, God. Is Senegal or is that? No.
No, I think it's Albania, I think.
England-Albania is this Friday.
I don't
Friday.
Even know if they're just friendlies.
No, World Cup qualifiers. England-Albania is on Friday. So stay off the drink and watch that one. And then Monday night, just when you think the fun's not stopped, it's England versus Latvia.
Not qualify for this World Cup, considering we've just had an invite as a podcast to play? You know, there's just ridiculous amount of teams in it. I mean, and England's group is absolute shite. Andorra, Albania, Latvia, Serbia. I'll tell you what, I'll look forward to the September internationals playing Andorra. God.
Also, how do you look at that World Cup qualifying group with those teams that you're playing and go, I know what we need, 4 goalkeepers?
Yeah. Yeah, what did you think about his squad then? Go on, because you were a big Southgate fan. I don't know what your thoughts are on him and the squad. Gibbs White is in it because Cole Palmer obviously has a knock, so he has found his way in. But why he wasn't in it in the first place, I don't know. But what were your initial thoughts on Tuchel?
I just thought it was mental. Like, I think as a... you can do so many things to play the game a little bit, and you have got to assert yourself and put your own stamp on it. But like, I don't look at that squad and go, oh, you know, real big two fingers up to us because he's put Jordan Henderson in and Kyle Walker. And just like, I just think there's so, like, with him, there's so many good young England players coming through, and we've got, where are we now? You know, we're building up to a World Cup, and then we're building up to a Euros after that. And with Southgate being in there so long, I just think you've got such a chance to be like, you know, these are the young lads that I'm going to take going forward, and these are the ones I'm going to build the squad around. Where it just feels like Dan Burns had an absolutely unbelievable week, and like, you know, from a point of view, I really want to see him play. And the centre back, we're not blessed, but I don't know. It just feels that there's so many things that we can do better to build for 2028. Like, I don't feel very confident with this squad for 2026 at all. So I almost think it's trying to get those younger players in with experience, but it just feels like he's gone the other way. And like for Morgan Gibbs-White, who we were literally talking about with, oh, I'd put him in the 11 to see, give him a chance, to have to be waited to call it up because of a Cole Palmer injury, I just think it's mental.
Well, yeah, I think what's really frustrating, because I always used to say I wanted Southgate out for a long time, is that especially when it's not, you know, it's a major tournament that's going to sack a manager, not this. I mean, look at the games England have got: Latvia, Andorra, Albania, Serbia. So although I don't agree with the selection of, let's say, a Kyle Walker or Jordan Henderson, they're not going to be the factor that, you know, let Albania win. We'll win, and that will cover up, oh, he was right. Look, he was right. We beat Albania with Henderson. So he won't be proved wrong, because you can basically pick anybody, which is why I agree with you. You're going to beat these teams anyway. So build something that's going to be basically, I remember Clive Woodward in the England team, he was building that for years before 2003 to win the World Cup in 2003 in the rugby.
Yeah.
And Kyle Walker shouldn't be anywhere near an England shirt anymore. Jordan Henderson shouldn't be anywhere near an England shirt anymore. I don't even understand the Reece James selection, if I'm being honest. He's barely been fit for Chelsea and probably just needs to, you know, play less games. Oh, let's put him in an England team because he'll probably be fit for 2026. I just think, look, the Jordan Henderson one, people have gone, well, yeah, but you know what? He's doing really well for Ajax. Oh, would that be the same Eredivisie where PSV got absolutely demolished by Arsenal who can't score goals? So I think, you know, suddenly, you know, we had 2 years of Ten Hag at United who was good in the Eredivisie. Yeah, but it's the Eredivisie. It's the Eredivisie. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a load of shit. And now suddenly, oh yeah, but Jordan Henderson's cooking in that league. And I'm like, but also, it's not 2018. What is he doing in an England shirt? He's done. He's absolutely done. I'd rather see Adam Wharton play from Palace because he's actually a young player and, you know, playing for England will develop him. It's like at Man United, you know, we've got, unfortunately got injured, but that young lad at the back, Heaven.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's only going to get better by playing minutes, and he's been playing minutes. And I don't see when you've got young players why you just wouldn't bring them along, let them have half an hour against bloody Albania and give them some development and get them to know what it's like around an England squad. But no, let's bring Jordan Henderson, who I mean, 18 months' time, is he going to a World Cup? Come on.
No, and you know, even with that, like you said a name there, and then like Conor Gallagher, like watched him play against Real Madrid over two legs. Obviously, he scored in the second one. And like he's playing top end football for Atletico Madrid, going up against Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, and from the outside, just looks like someone who is a really good asset and someone that would add something to the squad. So I think, but it's weird. Like he's done it with like, you know, calling up Miles Lewis-Skelly, and maybe it's the sort of style that he wants to play with. Like he's very much a five at the back man, isn't he?
Yeah,
in terms of trying to build it up. So maybe it's just tying up into that, but I don't know. I just four keepers as well. Just like what? That's fucking mental.
Yeah, but there's the you look at Dortmund are in a Champions League quarter final. There's that lad who plays over there, Gittins, Conor Gallagher, Tomori playing over in Italy. Yeah. Like there's players that are playing, that's starting to annoy me as well. Like there are English players who are playing outside of the Premier League, and I thought with Thomas Tuchel coming in, he might, you know, Southgate was never that good about that, and I thought, you know, there's three players there off the top of my head that you might think, you know, fair play, they're out playing in Europe. I'm a German manager, you know, I want to you know, not be so stuck to the past. I mean, I primarily the Premier League is the best league in the world, so you know, I've got no problem with collecting and selecting players from the Premier League. But Kyle Walker, Jordan Henderson, I just think it sends a terrible message. But look, we'll cruise through that group, and the damage will be in the World Cup if we're nowhere near, because we've got people like that still part of the squad. Jordan Henderson's 35 in the summer, by the way, and I'm pretty sure Kyle Walker's not far off that. So potentially we could be taking a couple of 36-year-olds to play in a World Cup after a long season.
But I mean, I'll probably, if you want more fun over the weekend and you're desperate to watch football, I'll be watching the under 21s. Like the squad's absolutely unbelievable because of how this one's ended up. You've got Branthwaite in there, Taylor Harwood-Bellis, who's obviously played for England, Rico Lewis, Elliot Anderson, who's been doing really well at Nottingham Forest, Gittins, who you mentioned, Archie Gray, who's playing week in and week out for Tottenham now, Adam Wharton, Alex Scott, Liam Delapte had a half good season for Ipswich in a bad team, Harvey Elliott, Philogene, Jay Stansfield should be England captain. But I mean, the under-21s is absolutely unbelievable. So,
will you take a couple of those over Kyle Walker and Jordan Henderson in games against, just remember, it's Albania and who? Latvia?
Yeah.
Yeah. The interesting about Tuchel is there's underlying feeling that he shouldn't be manager in certain quarters. Of course, there is. Let's call it what it is. I was actually quite excited about Tuchel. I'm not really bothered about the nationality thing, but I've got to say that England squad is a step backwards. Like he it was a weird squad to pick when you know you haven't got everybody behind you. But I don't know. Well, one player we didn't talk about is Rashford, which I think like he's done well for Villa. I've watched most of his games, but there's an element of that being a little bit more PR than actual performance. Like he has had a horrible season at Man United. He's done well at Villa, but he's not like Anthony Gordon. Like he's not setting the world on fire at Villa. I mean, a lot of the time he's on the bench, but to be fair, I don't have an issue with the Rashford one because I think there is a shortage of wide players at the moment with a few players being out injured, etc. But yeah, I mean, I ain't got a problem with the Rashford one, but as I said, the Jordan Henderson and the Kyle Walker one, just to me, he was just like, whatever.
Well, it'd be interesting to see, obviously, if he has got such a set system and that's not going to change, how that ties into the squad selections every time. Because, you know, say it is a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, it's like, right, does that rule some certain players out? Because, you know, even when you break down the roles of central midfielders, does that mean like player X can't be picked ever again because he doesn't tie into that system? And that's how we've seen, you know, Trent befuddled into a centre mid role before because Gareth didn't trust him at right back. So I wonder if Kyle Walker would have been picked. Go on.
I quite like the fact that he has got quite a system, a very specific system. And I think that under Southgate, it just became a little bit like you couldn't get certain players into it. Whereas I think the Tuchel system with the players that we've got might be more beneficial for the fact that, look, Harry Kane should be in a Southgate system playing on the last man. But in a Tuchel system, there probably is a bit more leeway for him to drop in and play with more like a Palmer or a Foden or something like that. It will be, like you say, it will be interesting to see how that works out, because I think the Southgate system didn't necessarily get the best out of the better players that we've got.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, yeah, it's just not very... I just really dawned on me doing this podcast this morning that the international break's happening. Even down in League One, we've not got a game because we're taking it off. So, I mean, next weekend's really going to be real dire times. So just, you know, stay close to your loved ones.
April's a good time, though. Lots of good games. April's good.
Virtue Trophy final.
Even the FA Cup quarterfinals look good as well. That's the first weekend back, isn't it? Then I think it's midweek internationals. Then it's the Champions League and the Europa League. And
thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Don't just beware, the Club World Cup's coming up as well. That's going to be an interesting concept.
Yeah, got to give it a chance.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it too much if you actually had Liverpool and Barcelona in it. I think that's the problem for me.
It's Chelsea, isn't it? Yeah. Any other Bridgeness? Anything else you've been up to? Anything you've been watching?
Only what I was talking about at the start. You know, very impressed with that Netflix program.
I did the
Stephen
the
Graham Adolescence. No,
had I done the podcast? I did the... Oh, no, we talked about The Gorge, hadn't we?
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
I meant that, but no.
You watched The Order, that was good.
The Order was very good, actually. And, obviously, yeah, being based around a true story, I thought it was really good. Really took me by surprise, that one.
The thing with this adolescence thing is I'm not going to give it away, because the big thing is that it's every episode is done on one camera. Even Clarkson was like, I don't understand the end of episode two, because basically... it's just one camera all the time. So like,
oh, really?
me and you could be chatting about there's been a murder, right?
Yeah.
And then the camera, I'll walk out the room and leave you. The camera follows me. And then the camera might go into another room where some other people are talking. So we're not camera anymore. It's the camera just stays consistently on the whole time. So it's one take, isn't it? When you think about it, for a 55 minute episode, it's one take, everything's going on. And at the end of episode two, he's in his car, he drives off, and the camera goes into the sky like a drone, flies across town, and then comes back down to where Stephen Graham is, and he's talking to someone. And they're like, I can't figure out how you can take a camera that was on the on the floor with no cut into the sky and back down.
Wow. I
watched one with Stephen Graham before. I think it's about a chef.
Oh, Boiling Point, was it?
Yeah, it was one camera. It's very, very clever. But look, the thing about that is it's like in this world of AI and all this bollocks where people are using AI for their homework and stuff and, you know, losing creativity. I think having done a bit of acting in my younger days,
go on.
To do that in one take, obviously you need the technical genius to follow around with one camera, but also absolutely everything. Whether not knocking into a door, not missing a line, that is just incredible to be able to do that. So I love all that. I think it's great because I think the world is becoming quite lazy, and I think that's, you don't get a lot of, what I'm trying to say is you don't get a lot of evolution in life. And I think creatively, that's just fantastic. And that brings it back to football as well. We've had that chat before, haven't we, about we don't get as many bangers from outside the net, outside the box anymore, people taking people on. So it's good to see evolution. And that's why Nottingham Forest or Bournemouth or Brighton in the top five would be evolutionary.
So, well, they've caught people sleeping, haven't they? They've caught people resting on the laurels, where the Premier League, a lot of people think, should be decided on the wage budget spent, but they've capitalised and found an area to work on, and they're doing it. So more power to them.
Complacency, they have. That's good. They've caught them out. It's a bit like putting Kelleher in goal for the final. Oh, we'll be all right. We'll still beat Newcastle. And you didn't. You got complacent. And now it's Newcastle who've got a trophy and not you yet.
Yeah, scenes were great, weren't they? Dan Byrne, love that. I thought yesterday was just real good. Yeah, you see on CBS they had to explain who Anton Deck were, because obviously they just kept showing pictures of him all the time.
Yeah, well, I felt like Shearer was like the third wheel, really. Mm. Anton Deck were getting way more coverage than Shearer, and I was like, it's not on the BBC, is it? Mm. So it was. I think it was on Sky and it was on ITV, wasn't it? And they're going to get
Anton good.
Deck, but Anton Deck got way more coverage than Shearer.
Yeah, maybe they're big time, mate.
Gerrard was there. I think they showed Gerrard, and then Liverpool conceded straight after. I was like, here we go. It's the Gerrard curse. Again.
We drew at the weekend 1-1 with Northampton Town, but unbeaten Roman Reigns. And
Roman Reigns scored,
yeah, Tribal Chief. And just want to get it done.
What's he doing attacking CM Punk? I'm not happy about that. Leave him alone.
Yeah, well, he took him, I think, why did he? Did he take him out of the Rumble? Yeah, but you got Paul Heyman in there, mate. That's the Heyman in the ring with CM Punk. Something big's about to happen. Tonight, first time since Elimination Chamber, John Cena, Cody Rhodes in the same building.
Is it in Brussels or something tonight?
Yeah. European crowds, European atmosphere. It's like watching a football match. I don't know if you saw SmackDown in Barcelona. Absolutely going off. So now's the time. Stop what you're doing. Get Netflix on. Raw, SmackDown, European crowds. Unbelievable.
Is that for the next month, is it?
Yep. I'm off to Raw in a couple of weeks in London. Got Raw and SmackDown in London. Barcelona, Bologna, I think they're at. Oh, it's going to be very tasty.
Lovely stuff. That's any other Bridgeness. Okay. Well, we might be back next week. It is international break. We're not necessarily. Will's
a
not
tough
a big fan
it?
Of it, and he used to love it. And but there's plenty of football coming up in April. Get your comments in. Lots to talk about there. Enjoyed that show. It's not, you know, always about the Champions League or the Premier League title. Fair play to Newcastle. Relegation, I think, is a big conversation. Enjoyed that. Thanks, Will.
Thank you, mate. Have a good week, and we'll speak to you all maybe next week or maybe the week after.
Have a good one, everyone. Take care.